This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Black American, Palestinian, and Palestinian American solidarity reached a new level of visibility after Michael Brown Jr.'s killing in 2014. Part of that played out on social media. In real time, Palestinian activists were sharing tips with protesters in Ferguson on how to manage tear gas and other injuries. Since then, many of those Black American activists from St. Louis and across the nation have joined Palestinian Americans in protest and calls for ceasefire in Gaza. But the solidarity between Palestinian American and Black American movements predates 2014. It goes back to the 1940s. Here to discuss the history and evolution of that solidarity, we have Chris Tinson, history professor and chair for African American Studies at St. Louis University, Ohan Ashe, activist and founder of For the Culture STL, and Omer Badran, business owner and Palestinian American activist. Thank you all for joining me, and welcome to St. Louis on the Air. So, Chris, parallels between Black American and Palestinian causes and experiences were drawn early in the start of the protests after Michael Brown Jr.'s killing in August 2014 and the subsequent Ferguson uprising. But the relationship between Black American and Palestinian activists and advocates, it goes back several decades. Can you give us a quick history lesson, Chris, on the beginnings of Black American and Palestinian solidarity?
Sure, I'll give a version of it. It won't be definitive because that takes too much time. But I think mainly we're thinking about the 20th century, early 20th century, where Black Americans themselves are thinking about questions of independence, freedom, liberation from Jim Crow and throughout World War II and into the Cold War. And so African Americans are thinking about freedom for themselves in a very direct way in anticipation of the more blossomed civil rights movement that we experience. You have people who are thinking about the role that liberation plays. So liberation of lands, liberation of people. And so you have a lot of African Americans who are connected to decolonization struggles around the world, particularly in Africa, the Caribbean, South America. Mm-hmm. And so they're starting to make parallels beyond the United States, even before we get to the question of Israel-Palestine. Mm-hmm. Once the Israel-Palestine situation comes up, many African Americans, in fact, supported the idea of, you know, a homeland for a diaspora group. And it wasn't until the 50s and into the early 60s that African Americans really start to see that there was a people already there and started to really hone in on moving beyond just what the State Department had said was there. Mm-hmm. And so by 67, you start to see a more expressive, especially for the progressive African American community, you start to see a more expressive solidarity with specifically Palestine. And so from that point, from 1967 forward, you really do see a conjoining of movements where people are seeing their situation in the Palestinian struggle and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So when you fast forward that to Ferguson,
exactly,
you start to see people making those parallels immediately. And for African Americans who were experiencing tear gas, police brutality, you know, it was people who had grieved situations in Palestine and in the Middle East that were showing African-American activists how to deal with tear gas, how to deal with, you know, police aggression. And that added to this long, long history of solidarity.
So why is it that you think that the solidarity between supporters of these two movements, which were separated by thousands of miles, that it persisted for as long as it did? And, you know, took us to what we're talking about around 2014, Mike Brown's killing, and then the protests that occurred thereafter.
The parallels are easy to make because the conditions either stay the same or they worsen. And in particular, we're thinking about the relationship between aggrieved communities and policing institutions or, you know, state violence. And I think that because those conditions either stay the same or worsen, it's really easy to make the parallels between those two communities who continue to bear the brunt of that kind of aggression.
Mm-hmm. So as we're hearing Chris talk about that history, we could consider it to be, you know, academic. What part of that resonates maybe with the decision that you made, Ohan, about participating in protest in 2014?
Yeah, I think both of them are a reflection of each other, seeing violence, seeing harm, and knowing that sitting back wasn't going to fix anything, and having to, like, get up and do something.
And Omar, for you, in 2014, as you were seeing what was going on in this St. Louis community that you've grown up in, was there a sense of solidarity with Black activists that you were seeing immediately? Did it take some time? What was that process like for you?
For me personally, I was actually there in Ferguson during the 2014 protests. And there were a number of other Palestinians from the community that joined me and came out to those protests. And really what was so shocking was just the brutal reaction to those protests. And it was really easy for us to make those same comparisons because it's the same exact type of repression that we see in our communities when we protest in Palestine.
And so, Chris, that mm-hmm. gets to what you were talking about. Omar, had you participated in pro-Palestinian protests before you took part in the protests that happened after the killing of Mike Brown?
Yeah, so my activism for Palestinian emancipation goes back before the 2014 protests for Mike Brown. Basically, like all my life, my mom and my dad have been pretty active and taking me to protests. You know, they had a circle of friends that were very involved with this too, many of them Palestinian, some of them American, some of them Jewish. So very a diverse group of people that I kind of grew up around that were all active in, you know, different activist causes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to what extent, Ohan, were you aware mm-hmm. of some of those connections between what Palestinians experienced and what they were protesting, and then what you were seeing going on, not only in 2014, but with what you had experienced growing up here?
Mm-hmm. So to be transparent, like living a life as a Black American, if you are not seeking that knowledge isn't really given to you. So before 2014, I wasn't aware. I was one of those people who learned while we were out there. Bassem, rest in peace, was a Palestinian American who really taught us the reflection of each other's struggle, why it was important to amplify. And then, of course, the tweets from Palestinians that taught us what to do when we were hit with tear gas, what helps in those ways. So it wasn't until those moments, and then also looking back in history to see what James Baldwin was saying, to see what Angela Davis was saying, where we were even able to connect, or my reality to what is happening in Palestine even became aware.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just on a small fraction compared to what October 7th exposed.
Right. Chris, you actually came to St. Louis with a group of students that you were teaching on the East Coast, and you accompanied them to protests that were part of the Ferguson movement. As far as what you have heard, what we've heard right now from Ohan and Omar, how much of what they have expressed also was what was compelling your students to want to leave where they were learning and the communities that they had grown up in mm-hmm. to come here for those protests in 2014?
Well, yeah, I mean, Ferguson October was this, you know, global call, and, you know, folks outside of the St. Louis region were being invited to come and be in solidarity and to do teach-ins and murals and all kind of, you know, a range of activities. And so it was a flashpoint for many of us to connect even struggles domestically, whether you're talking about Trayvon Martin or, you know, all the different police brutality and the unarmed killings that seemed like be a rash of them throughout the 2000s. We were making those connections, and then, you know, Mike Brown killing happened, and it just went to a fever pitch. Mm-hmm. I was going to come down anyway. And when I was teaching this class on Black radicalism, I told my students that I was going to come. They said, well, we're going to go too. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. And so we all came, and they engaged with some local groups like Tribe X and Organization for Black Struggle and many other local organizations. And so my students, you know, they were already radicalized in general and ready to, you know, put themselves in service of the struggle. But, you know, I wanted to make this point about study in general. You know, study is key to any form of solidarity. And it's key to actually revolutionary or progressive movements, you know. And so my students were living that and experiencing that and wanted to come and see it up close. And many of them are still active in their different walks of life 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10 years from that moment.
Right. Omar, you said that your exposure to and experience with protests started when you were young and with your family. Being in St. Louis as a young person, even before, you know, 10 years ago, how much awareness was there about the experience of Palestinian people? And how much did you find yourself and your Palestinian community members here in St. Louis educating other people because they did not get the kind of knowledge that we've just heard from Professor Chris Tinson?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say that that's a struggle we've been dealing with my entire life, is like people really never knew much about Palestine, couldn't tell you where it was on a map. You know, the media really does a good job of kind of hiding Palestinians and Palestinian voices. And, you know, it's really just like never there in the mainstream for people to really absorb and learn about. So like, being an activist for Palestinian means that you need to like constantly be educating people and talking to them, and you need to have a passion for that. You know, the education is obviously critical. You need to be able to know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's just a constant uphill battle, I would say. But I do see like light at the end of the tunnel. More and more every day people are actually just going out and educating themselves. And I really believe that just a very small amount of education and Google can get people a lot of great, resourceful information to really understand this issue. You know, it is somewhat complex, but just with a minimal amount of research, they can learn a lot.
Right. So when it came to your awareness and education, Omar, about Black American struggles, how is it that you learned about that? And was it similar to the way that you were passing along information, education about Palestinian struggle?
Yeah, actually, I think so both. Like I would talk to Black activists and like learn from, you know, different activists, you know, that were like have resources online for you to learn from and stuff like that. And then there's also just like the personal level of just like doing my own research and trying to learn for myself. And, you know, then there's also just like the real world experiences one lives as a person that grows up in St. Louis and kind of sees, you know, the structural racism that actually, you know, exists to this day here. So, you know, it's, I think, a combination of all of that for me.
Mm-hmm. Ohan, at some point, did you start seeing overlaps in the experiences of Black Americans, including yourself, and the experiences of Palestinians sort of on a day-to-day sort of basis rather than, you know, unfortunately, the kinds of spectacular incidences of violence that are happening abroad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, a direct reflection in accessibility to a lot of things. It is hard for Black Americans to have access to resources, education, things like that. And learning more about what happens in Palestine, it is that same thing. Those direct access and making that day-to-day life easier is harder for them as well. So it's those systemic structures, those struggles, the oppression, that unless you live those experiences, you don't even realize that it's a reality for people, that the systems and structures set in place are meant to be harder for a certain group of people. And being able to see that within each other and understanding those things within each other is something that you learn when you talk more and more. So absolutely.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that has come up in this conversation is the term radical and radicalism. That can be understood in very different ways, I think, depending on where you're starting to look. What is it about the radical part that is maybe not well understood or is assumed to mean something that it is not, mm-hmm. Chris?
Radical is a contentious term. And I think we should historicize it just a little bit, but I think when people run from the term or when they're bothered by it, they're thinking of overthrowing everything, society just upside down. And what we're talking about is more of what is your orientation to the world? How do you see the world? Do you see the world as, and do you see people as merely ripe for exploitation? Or do you see them as people just like you who are looking to flourish, looking to thrive, looking to live? And when we say radical, we're talking about people who are really trying to get to the root of the problem. And we're trying to see who is really trying to advance human flourishing, human thriving, regardless of race, regardless of nationality. And do you see human brotherhood? Do you see my future in your future? You know, these kinds of concepts, we consider those radical practice, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what we learn from Black feminism, what we learn from the progressive end of the civil rights movement into the Black liberation movement.
Mm-hmm. For the sake of acknowledging that humans, human, meaning we're not going to all get along even if we hold some of the same ideals. And in St. Louis and in many other places, there's been conflict, right? There are challenges that exist, particularly between those who are of immigrant communities and Black Americans. What are some of the challenges maybe that have had to be acknowledged when it comes to Palestinian American community and anti-Blackness, which is so much part of what it is to live in America? Omar?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's an unfortunate reality that that exists in, you know, my community as well as most communities, you know. And I think it's something that our community struggles with, unfortunately, but I think we've made great strides in that. Unfortunately, discrimination does, you know, rear its head in every, you know, society. And the Palestinian society is really no different than that. It is a very diverse society, like, but I think that the fact that we all struggle under the same system of oppression kind of gives us a cause for camaraderie and to kind of see the humanity in each other when we're all struggling for the same thing.
We need to take a very quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. Choosewood.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about Black American and Palestinian American solidarity in protest movements. With me are Chris Tinson, history professor and chair of African American Studies at St. Louis University, and St. Louis activists Omar Badran and Ohan Ashe. And I want to go back to 2014. And Ohan, for you, at that time, you were 24. Our conversation has taken us through history, starting in 1948. There's the Arab-Israeli War. And then in 2014, with the killing of Michael Brown Jr., and now, 10 years after that, what are some of the changes that you have observed in solidarity efforts among Black Americans, Palestinians, and Palestinian American activists, especially right now, mm-hmm. given the ongoing war in Gaza?
Yeah, I think that what we see today is this real desire to connect the movements, to expand both. I've had the amazing opportunity to organize some protests with the Palestinian groups, and just really making sure, and it's not difficult to do. When we talk about the struggles happening in Palestine, when we talk about the struggles that Black Americans face, there are differences, but there are a lot of similarities. And a lot of times with what's happening in Gaza right now, you can see that being the extension from where we are as Black Americans today and where it could possibly go in the future. So I think right now it is just this desire to uplift. I think we have saw oppression in St. Louis amplify since 2014. We've learned, we've grown, and we realize that fighting to get over and get beyond struggles are always going to be bigger when we join in efforts. And I also think that what is happening in Palestine, what is happening in Gaza, is too big to stay quiet about. Genocide anywhere is unacceptable. So again, learning, educating ourselves so that we can show up for our brothers and sisters as well.
Mm-hmm. Chris, in the present day, what is it that you would say about Israelis who think about their quest for a place to belong and to be recognized in much the same way that you've described the solidarity between Black Americans and Palestinians?
That's a tough question that I can't really answer fully because that's not my community, one, and I don't want to speak for them. But I also want to say, none of our communities are monolithic, right? I mean, there's great diversity within all of our communities. And so I think that that's really, important for us to think about. I think, though, we do have to agree on that a genocide is taking place. Mm-hmm. We have to agree with that. But I think many people, that has become a political football over this, last year or so. Mm-hmm. And so we have to agree on that in order to move forward towards a kind of transracial, global solidarity in general.
Mm-hmm. So Omar and Ohan, you're both now in your 30s, 30-somethings. You were in your 20s during the Ferguson uprising, and today you're also both business owners and you're leaders in your respective communities. How is the way that you engage with these movements? How has that changed in the last 10 years? Omar?
So as a business owner, you have to decide to make a sacrifice for something that's bigger than, the for-profit, nonstop hustle and bustle work life. And like, there comes a time when your morals become more important than making a buck at the end of the day. The way I see it, and I think a lot of other Palestinians see it, it's like the more successful we get here in America as business people, the more money we make, the more taxes we pay, the more money that we're sending to bomb our homeland, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's almost become a zero-sum game for a lot of us at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the success isn't even what we're going for. It's not the same measure of success anymore. It's more of like, what type of impact can we have?
Ohan, how about for you? How has what you're doing now affected the way that you choose to engage with protest around whatever it happens to be?
Yeah. So for me, the way that my life has shifted from 2014, in 2014, Mike Brown Jr. and his murder absolutely changed my life. I've grown a lot in my activism. I started behind scenes in media, recording, and just documenting what was happening to put out to the public, to helping to lead protest and organize in 2017 with Jason Stockley, to finding my own organization for the Culture STL, which uplifts and amplifies Black-owned businesses. And I'm bringing all of that up to say is that as I progress in the years, I've taken more responsibility upon myself to grow and educate my community as well. So right now, I find myself trying to do just that. So we have a lot of community members, a lot of Black Americans that don't understand why we should care about what's going on in Palestine. And I feel like it is my responsibility as someone who has been a part of movements, as someone who sees the movements in their connection and also understanding why for some Black Americans or a lot of Americans in general that it shouldn't impact us. I think that is very important that we talk about those things. Omar makes a great point in just our dollars are funding their genocide right now and what that looks like for us. And if the things that are happening to Palestinians there, the reason why they were able to help us back in Ferguson is because they dealt with it, because they were tear gassed, because they are harmed. So for me, it is a role of educating our community members who don't understand and don't want to understand, and making sure that an entire group of people is not silenced like we have been silenced.
How do you know that it's working, Ohan?
I think the movement shows it with how many people are coming out to protest, with how many people are talking about it. And one thing that I do think that social media has done is connected us. I am able to see directly what is happening because I follow Palestinians like Bassan, who is documenting everything that is happening, Motaz that is documenting and showing real photos of what's happening. So they're educating me so that I can in turn educate my community as well. Again, another way of connection.
Mm-hmm. Other than the history of Palestinian activism and Black American activism, there is a particular relationship that exists between Black Americans and Palestinians, or with Arab Americans overall. And specifically when it comes to businesses, there are many businesses owned by Arab Americans in predominantly Black communities. Is there something to be said about, you know, the symbiotic relationship that exists between members of these two communities, you know, these two cultures, and the solidarity between Black and Palestinian activist movements, Omar?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm actually the product of one of those people. You know, my father owned a business in the inner city in a neighborhood. You know, he came to America as an immigrant, didn't really have an opportunity to get a formal education. So he ended up working in a factory, him and his brother, for a few years, saved up some money and bought a business in the city of St. Louis. And I actually grew up working with him in that community, and it gave me a chance to actually get to know the Black community here in St. Louis, because we do live in still kind of a segregated city in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think really like the biggest thing I could say about that is I think Palestinians, like pretty much any other minority, have a certain level of respect for Black people just because of what they have historically been through, but not just because of what they've historically been through, also because of how significant their impact is on a global level. You know, it's really like incomparable to any other group. There's no other minority that has that much influence on culture on a global scale than Black Americans, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that minorities in general tend to look at Black Americans for like a leadership and direction.
Do you think you two, Ohan and Omar, that you would be sitting next to each other in this way had it not been for 2014?
It's a great question. I think like Mike Brown was just like by chance, like the one injustice that kind of got all of that attention at the time. But like if it hadn't been Mike Brown, it could have been George Floyd or it could have been any other of the people that get killed or die all the time that we never hear their name, right? Like mm-hmm. it just takes one story that the media wants to run with and that people actually want to like get behind. And, you know, the reason why so many people are able to empathize with the Palestinians now, it's because they're able to see the suffering that they're going through. So I think like that's the same when we see videos of like a police officer with his knee on the neck of a suspect or, you know, quote unquote suspect. And when we start to dig deeper and we find out, oh, that tactic comes directly from Israeli police training of American police departments. And, you know, you start to dig a little deeper. You start to really make those connections for sure.
Yeah, I would say for me personally, I'm not sure. I think Mike Brown had an impact directly on my life that I'm not sure where I would be had he still been here today, one. And then the way that Ferguson also changed this world, the way that we view protests today, we hadn't had that acceptance again of radical protests like that since civil rights. So I don't know if the conversation would be as big or if it would exist in this way if Mike Brown had not happened, because I think what happened with Ferguson radicalized the world so much that we saw protests and movements exist and amplify over time because of what happened here.
So as we wrap here, you know, there are peace treaties being negotiated to end the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, but rebuilding and rehabilitation is going to require years and years. How do you think that this new phase, that phase of rebuilding, renewal, rehabilitation, how will this new phase affect the relationship between Black American and Palestinian movements? I mean, do you anticipate a shift in focus, for example, or perhaps a deepening of commitment to existing priorities?
Yeah, I think that latter point is where it's at. I think many of the people I'm around and talk to about this issue, definitely this is their issue for the duration, right? You know, and what I mean by that is this is their issue for the rest of their lives. Many of them see this as inseparable from the way that they want to carry out their life for the rest of their lives. And so Palestine is going to remain a critical issue for many folks that I know. I imagine that it won't be for everybody, obviously. But I think what would accelerate that, though, is also justice, which is, you know, there are some criminal charges that need to be carried out on the international scale that we're watching. And I think that that will go a long way to signify the importance of Palestine and the importance of Gaza for this period and you know, for the future. Mm-hmm.
Chris Tinson is history professor and chair of African American studies at St. Louis University. Omar Badran is a Palestinian American business owner and activist, and Ohan Ashe is an activist and the founder of For the Culture STL. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced and edited by Maya Norfleet. Recorded by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer. Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.